Afternoon. Welcome to Live with MJ.
What about that?
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live with MJ, where I have the distinct pleasure to interview some of the greatest names in sports, entertainment, philanthropy, and corporate America. For those of you who are first-time listeners, my name is MJ Padone. I am the president and founder of Interpublic Relations, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Gina Mason. Hello, Gina.
Hi, MJ. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you. I'm very excited to have Art Chomsky as our guest today.
I know, right? I mean, baseball season's right around the corner, and I think this is our first guest who has been a professional baseball player. So it'll be really exciting to hear what he has to say about the upcoming baseball season.
Absolutely. And in hopes of getting everyone prepared for spring and baseball season, again, today we have the pleasure of interviewing World Series champion and New York Mets star Art Chomsky. Art was a professional baseball player for 13 years, starting his illustrious career with the Cincinnati Reds in 1960. He was traded to the New York Mets in the winter of 1967 and was a major part of the Miracle Mets that won the 1969 World Series. Known for his big bat, Art is the only player in Major League history to hit 3 home runs in a game who was not in the starting lineup, and he made a lasting impact on the game and New York Mets fans everywhere.
Also, in his retirement, Art has been an entrepreneur in various businesses, including owning his own restaurants. He's worked as a sports broadcaster for WNEW-TV, Channel 5 in New York City, as well as ESPN and the New York Mets, doing play-by-play and color commentary. He also hosted a talk show on WFAN Radio Network and has written featured guest editorials for the sports section of New York Times. He also wrote a book called The Magnificent Seasons about the Mets, Jets, and Knicks all winning championships in 1969 and 1970. And he also, in 2007, managed the first Israeli baseball league team called the Modin Miracle. So Art's got a lot of great stuff to go on, and we're very excited to have him on. Art, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Art, it's so great to have you on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. At least I'm in a warm place. It's too cold out.
Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from...
Are you...
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
No, I'm in a warm office, and it's just nice to be inside, quite honestly.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us you were on some tropical island, you know, having
I just came back.
Frozen margarita.
Yeah.
Or it's spring training.
I was working a cruise for a while, and about 2 weeks ago, and that was great. I came back to all this really cold weather, and it was kind of a shock, but you know it is. I live in New York, so I'm used to it, and it is what it is. But all things considered, I'd rather be in spring training somewhere, playing right now, making some big money, and being on the field someplace.
Well, of course we're going to get to all that, but why don't you tell us, what made you decide to play baseball and not some other sport?
Well, I grew up in St. Louis and a big Cardinal fan. My dad would take me to the games and was really the first person to kind of get me involved in baseball. It was a great area for young kids. The Little Leagues were great there. And in the history of professional baseball, a lot of guys have come out of that area and gone on to have great careers in the major leagues. But I really love baseball, and the thing about it is I had really good friends who just loved the game as much as I did. And the only thing we did in the summer was play baseball. You know, we did some other sports just to kind of to stay in shape and play them. But really, from most of my friends, it all was baseball. And so from the time I could really walk and got into the Little Leagues, I really loved the game. And I had the luxury of being in St. Louis and following the St. Louis Cardinals, and had my heroes on that on the Cardinal team, particularly Stan Musial, who was a great, great Hall of Fame player, and lived and died with what the Cardinals did. And then eventually, as I got older and knew that I had some ability, I had the opportunity to play in some really good leagues in the area, and there was a number of teams that wanted to sign me back when I decided to become professional. There was no draft, so you could sign with whatever team. in about 2 or 3 years after I signed the contract, they changed that. And so I had a chance to sign with about 10 or 12 teams, and for whatever reason, decided I wanted to get away from, not from, away from St. Louis, but just maybe try something different, sign with the Cincinnati Reds. But the baseball, just to back to the question, was just a game that I loved and really wasn't interested other than as a fan for these other sports. But luckily I just had friends who loved the game as much as I did and wanted to play as much as I did.
Well, that's great. I hope that my son follows with the same passion. I have a nephew who is following that, and he's actually a scholarship playing for Atlanta Highlands. So hopefully we will have two baseball players in the family.
Well, why
but
not?
So
I mean, it's just that nowadays kids have so many other options, you know, it's still the greatest game in the world. I love baseball, but compared to some other sports, kids are, it's a slow sport. It has all the beautiful nuances, but kids that love the game and enjoy playing it, those are really great. Still a great sport.
But I think that in many ways, and I don't know if it's because the game is too long or what really has changed, but I feel like it's a dying sport. Am I correct in saying that, or?
Well, it's still, to me, it's still the greatest sport. What's happened is we live in an age where it's everything's hurry up. What are you doing for me now? And baseball is like I said before, it's a game of nuances. It's a game of patience. I find when I work with kids and talk to groups of kids, everybody just wants to hit. Nobody wants to work in the other facets of the game because that's an action going on right now. And nobody wants to work on this. Not too many kids want to work in the field and want to work in improving the game and other than hitting. And compared to other sports, it's just a much slower sport. And I think baseball, as they're trying to now, is speeding up the game and trying to make it more appealing for fans to watch. And I think part of the reason that the Little Leagues have shrunk in the last few years is that kids just have shied away from baseball because the options now are soccer and lacrosse and other sports that are much more running, much more action-oriented. And I think baseball can kind of speed up the game a little bit and get kids more interested in this, as I was as a kid growing up. I think they'll have much more success drawing more kids to playing the game.
And what do you think of the new MLB putting in the rule, the pace of game rules? Because I know there's kind of been mixed reaction. I know David Ortiz was pretty outspoken about it today. And, you know, you have different players coming out saying, you know, whether they agree with it or don't agree with it. What do you think about it?
Well, the players that don't agree with it are the ones who take all the time and step out of the box, and they don't want to change. You know, we're all creatures of habit, and I can understand that. But for me personally, I just have really difficulty watching the game as a fan. At times, because it seems to me every at-bat is 10 minutes. The guys step in, step out. They take a lot of pitches. That's the style of hitting now is teams are teaching hitters to take pitches, work the count. And I grew up in an era at a time when it was go up and get that pitch to hit and swing the bat and get that run home from third base or second base. But the game has changed. But on a personal level, I have trouble watching the game when it's so slow. And I think baseball recognizes they have a problem. They have to get more fans interested in the games itself. You know, I always tell people that when I was growing up, when I'd go to the ball games, and my dad would not get out of that seat unless he had to go to the bathroom. He was there. If you wanted something to eat, you just buy something from the vendor, and you wanted a soda, you had to get it from the vendor. But now I think the way baseball has structured the game in the last few years is that they want you to pay for parking. They want you to buy the tickets. They want you to come to the games, but they don't care if you really watch the game. They want you up in the restaurants. They want you up in the game rooms. They want you up in the memorabilia store. And I think that has taken away from the interest of the game. It's, you know, it still draws people. It's just people going to the games, but not many people are keeping score. The things that focused on the game 100%. And I think baseball needs to do something to get people more interested in watching the game. And I think by speeding up certain aspects of it, they're starting the way they should do, with small steps, and see if that works, and then maybe make some other adjustments. But I think it gets to the point where the game is so slow. It's always been a game where you didn't have a clock, and that was the best part of it. But now we're talking about three-hour ball games, and there's not a lot of runs scored, and they're still long, drawn-out games. And I think they've got to find some way to speed it up where they can keep fans interested in it from the game itself, not so much as what's going on at the ball, at the stadium, up in the restaurants and stuff like that, but on the field.
I think it's just become such a big business, and they're losing sight of the actual game, and it's now it's the experience with all, like you're saying, all the great restaurants, and they want people to shop and so forth. So I just wish, even if it was maybe two innings less.
Well,
I know at times if it's not...
Yeah, the game has become secondary, unfortunately.
Right.
And it's about coming to the event. It's about coming to the stadiums and getting, and then I understand that. It's all about the bottom line, and I understand that the stadiums have to be built with all these amenities and all these things where will entice people to do it. But, I come from that old school where I always felt like the game was the most important thing. But I think they're starting to realize that they've got to speed up the game and get people's interest, still keep people's interest in what's going on the field. I mean, it's one thing to go up and have a nice meal in a restaurant, but at the same time, the action on the field is really what is the beauty of baseball, and I think that's really what they've got to concentrate on. And hopefully they're starting to do it. I think they're realizing they've got a little bit of a problem.
What was it like for you transitioning from living in the Midwest, being born in St. Louis, and then, coming to the Big Apple?
Oh, that's a great
easy
question.
Transition?
Well, I started my career with Cincinnati, which was a city, not much different than St. Louis. It was a, Midwestern city, and it was kind of like being at home there. I enjoyed my years there, but when I got traded to New York, that was culture shock for me, for a couple of reasons. First, the city was so big. I mean, when we would come here as a visiting player when I was with the Reds, and it was just like so big, and it was a little different for me. It was a little strange, and I just wasn't really my favorite place. And then, of course, the Mets were not a very good team. And so when I got traded here, that was really a shock for me. And it was really a transition period. But when I got here, after my first season, I moved into the city, and my life changed. It was a wonderful experience for me being in New York. And then, of course, in 1969, we win the World Series, and everything changed for me on October 16th, 1969. We won the World Series. That was really a change. But just getting here the very first time, or coming to New York to be a player here, it was different because the city is so big. There's so much to do. It's such a incredible variety of people and things to do that it was overwhelming. But once I got involved and moved into the city, I moved into Manhattan and rented a house in Queens. I was married and had two little children at the time. And after the season was over, we moved into the city, and it was an incredible experience. My kids went to public school. They grew up in the city, and I've been in love with New York, or Manhattan in particular, ever since.
Great. So then can you tell us about your experience here when you were playing with the Mets? And also, we want to hear about the World Series, what that was like for you.
Well, the experience with the Mets was my first thought, like I said, when I got traded was coming to New York, which was going to be a little bit strange. But also the Mets were a really bad team. And when we played against them, we always felt that if you didn't win two out of three games, you're having a bad series. But everything changed with when Gil Hodges became manager of the Mets, and he came over the same year I did, and a number of players, Tommy Agee, Al Weiss, a number of players joined the team around the same time that I did, and you knew right away when Gil took over that things were going to be different because he had come from that Brooklyn Dodger mentality of all those great teams over in Brooklyn, and he really changed the feeling and the thinking about how the players really look playing for the Mets. And I remember the very first day in spring training when in 1968 he said, you guys are not going to be the same old Mets as before. Well, I had just joined the team, so I couldn't take any blame for those previous years, but I knew exactly what he was talking about, and he was right. He demanded better play, better performances on and off the field, and in the first year I was there, we finished ninth. The last game out of finished ninth, I believe, one half game out of last place. There was only one division then; it was just the National League. And then in 1969, both American League and National League went to division play, and we were in the Eastern Division in the National League. And I don't think anybody in their right mind would have ever thought that we were ever going to win a division, let alone a National League pennant or a World Series. But things did start to change in 68, and then in 69. We just, from about August on, we became a team that was unbeatable. We were the second team in New York that year to win a championship. The Jets had shocked the world by winning the Super Bowl, which was then Super Bowl III in January. And then we won the World Series in October. And then, of course, the Knicks won the NBA championship in May of 70. So you had three New York teams winning championships in that period of time. And what's really interesting, and a lot of people don't know this, is that all three of the teams had never won before. We all won for the very first time. And it was such an exciting time. Mm-hmm. It was such an exciting time. You know, I wrote a book called The Magnificent Seasons about it, and I tried to show what was going on in the city and the country and the world at the time with all the problems that Vietnam and all the city problems with that were going on here with the strikes and social unrest and political upheaval, and it was such a difficult time that everybody was living in, particularly in this area. And so these three teams trying to really brighten people's spirits, kind of made them feel like there was light at the end of the tunnel. But for three teams to win championships in that same period of time was just an unbelievable experience. So all of our lives changed. We're part of those teams, and quite honestly, I'm still in New York because of it. Probably doing this interview with you guys because of it. And so I understand the significance of it. I understand how important it was to be part of that team. And I do understand the importance of that team in the history of baseball and sports in New York. It was such a great honor for me to be part of it. And I'm very thankful every day about having been part of that team because it was so special. And for me, it's just great. And doing interviews like this is just great.
Yeah.
You know, and as I was saying, clearly, of course, we want to hear about like a memory from when you were playing during the World Series that stands out. But the experience that you just shared, as far as the Jets winning and the Knicks winning, and of course the Mets all for the first time, that's certainly another fantastic memory. That, God, I mean, I don't think anybody else can say that three sports in the same year.
Yeah, you know, if you stop and think about it, and I became friends with all the guys that played on, or most of the guys that played on all the other teams, including the Namaths and all those guys with the Jets. And if you stop and think about sports in the history of this country, and in particular in New York City, when you see Joe Namath running off the field pointing his finger to the sky after they won Super Bowl III, and then you see Cleon Jones on our team going down to one knee catching that last out in the World Series, and then Willis Reed running onto the court in Game 7 of that wonderful championship series between the Knicks and the Lakers, those are icon moments in the history of sports. And for me to be part of it, it was really a thrill. And I appreciate everything. You know, I get a lot of questions when I do a lot of speaking engagements and personal appearances. You know, the standard questions: who was the toughest pitcher? Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame because I started my career with Cincinnati? One of the real basic questions I get is, don't you wish you're playing now, making all the money? And my first reaction is, what, are you crazy? Of course I wish I was playing. But the reality of it is, I look back on my career, is that I was really lucky enough to be playing in an era that had, I believe, the greatest, collectively the greatest players in the history of the game in the 60s. And just nationally were Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, Sandy Koufax, you know, all the great pitchers: Koufax, Drysdale, Marischal, Gibson, Tom Seaver. I mean, I can go on and on with names just in the National League. Right. And importantly also was I was part of that incredible team, that 69 Met team that lives on forever, because the legacy of that team has been passed on from generation to generation. I meet kids who weren't even born who know about that team from their parents and their grandparents. So, you know, I Would I like to be playing now, making all that money? Yes, of course. It would.
It would be
no brainer. But when I wear my World Series ring, I always tell people that I wouldn't trade it for anything for this ring. And having been played in a wonderful team and a great city like New York, but also having played in that era that has some of the greatest players collectively in the history of the game.
That's awesome. And then, again, not too many people can say that. So congratulations to you on such a tremendous career, you know, which is fantastic. But I do have to ask you this question. In 1969, you made that famous decision to not play during Yom Kippur. So can you tell us the I'm sure you had a lot of flack from that and a lot of fan reaction.
Not so much flack, just apprehension. We were right in the middle of a pennant race, and I was toying with whether to do it or not do it, and it was a major decision because this particular day that I was not going to play, we were playing a doubleheader in Pittsburgh, and it turns out to be kind of a funny story, and I'll try and make it a little shorter than normally tell, but I went up to Gil Hodges, and I was really just really in between whether to not play or play, and I said to him, I really didn't talk to Gil much because he was a tough guy, and I had the utmost respect for him. I just didn't have a lot of conversation with him, and I said to him, I'm really torn because we're in the middle of this pennant race, and he just looked me in the eye and he said, you do whatever you think is best for you, and we'll worry about everything else. So I didn't play. We were in Pittsburgh. And my worst fear was that if we lose the doubleheader, I'm going to get all this hate mail and all this stuff. And I said, if it's a split where we win one or lose one, I can deal with that. But please, no, don't let's not lose the doubleheader. Well, it turns out we won both games of the doubleheader 1-0. And it was one of those incredible moments of that year, of a year that had many, many memorable moments. And so the next day I went to the ballpark and thinking everybody was going to be happy for me to seeing me, I was back, and you know everybody would be kind of in a good mood. And I walk into the locker room, and nobody really said anything to me, and I was kind of just a little apprehensive. And I walked over to my locker, and inside my locker was this big poster or sign that said, "Why don't you stay out the rest of the year?" which I thought was kind of funny. So it was somebody put up a little joke, and I thought it was really funny, but.
Right.
It turned out great for us. We won both games in a doubleheader, and the rest is history. Went on to win the National League East and the pennant in the World Series. So it was
great.
I get a lot of people talking to me about that, and a lot of kids tell me about their parents, or even grown-ups telling me about, I remember when you did that. And at the time, it wasn't that big a deal. I didn't think of it as anything more than what I thought morally I should do. And and over the years, it's kind of developed into some sort of it's gotten embellished a little bit, quite honestly. But people talk to me about it, I guess it's good. But the reality of it was, it was just happened to fall on this day where we were playing two games, and a lot of people reminded me about it over the years. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I'm sure. I mentioned to somebody last week that we were going to have you on the show, and it's a Wall Street guy, Jewish, and he said, if I meet Art, I'm going to shake his hand. And he mentioned you not playing on Yom Kippur. So it has, people do remember that. And you know what, it says a lot about who you are and your character. So I think that was a great decision, and good for you.
Well, it probably wouldn't have been a great decision if we lost two games, but the way it turned out, my teammates covered for me, and it worked out great. And like I said, it's gotten a lot of notoriety over the years. But it was really a time when I just thought, the manager was so nice to just say, do what you think is best, and it turned out it worked out best for all of us on that team.
Yeah, and 69 and 86? The Mets have been really struggling since then. So what are your predictions for this year? We have Matt Harvey coming back from his Tommy John surgery, and how do you think the Mets are going to stack up this year?
Well, the good thing about it right now is that everybody starts out on a level field. So they've got as good a chance as anybody. I think just I don't follow as close as I used to, but I know that they have good young pitching. And if they get some timely hitting, I think they'll be fine. And the reality of it is, like us in 1968, they've got to find ways to win close games. There was no secret. I always tell people, they say, how did you turn it around? What did you do different? All this stuff. And reality of it is we just found ways to win close games. And they, over the last number of years, have not found ways to win close games. And that just comes with some confidence. You start to believe in yourself, and you win one here, and you win another one tomorrow that you might have lost a year or so ago. And that's how it really starts to happen. The way you win consistently in baseball is with really good pitching, good defense, and timely hitting. And that was our thing back in 1969. And they've got good pitching. They got good young pitching. And I just don't know about their hitting, and I just don't know much about their defense. But it starts with the pitching, and they certainly got that. And if you can start winning some close games, the way the game is set up now is if you can just get into the playoffs. You know, it used to be where you just had two teams in the World Series, and then they had started the playoff format, and now they've added more teams. So if you can just find a way to get into the playoffs, and then anything can happen, short series, you just play some good games, and all of a sudden you carry your own into the World Series. And that's really the secret, I believe. Just stay in the hunt. Don't be out of the pennant race in July or August. You're still in the pennant race in those months, and you got a shot. And then anything can happen. And that would be my best advice to anybody I talk to about them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you never know what can happen. It just takes one pitch, right? Can change a game.
Exactly right. Keep the faith. But
absolutely.
The hope is eternal. And springtime always is a time for optimism. And this is really the time of the year that I miss the game. I don't miss it during the season. I've been out of it long enough to be so I'm interested in so many other things right now. But this time of year when spring training starts and it's cold up here and I see these guys down in the sun working out, that's when I really miss the game because it was such a part of my life. And spring training was a wonderful time, particularly if you had a team made and you weren't fighting for a job. You were just down there to get in shape and get ready for the season. It was a wonderful time to be playing baseball. Well, any time is a wonderful time to be playing baseball. Let me rephrase that. But spring training was always a great time. We see these sports reports and photos from down in Florida, and the sun's out, and it's 70 degrees, and we're, of course, up here, and we're cold. But this is, like I said, the one time I do miss the game. I have such great memories and thoughts keep me going, and I have such a tremendous fondness for my teammates who were part of that team, that team, and all the guys who played in New York in that period with the Jets and the Knicks and all of us. We have this common kind of bond it's a great thing to be able to talk about whenever we see each other.
Yeah. Absolutely, when you go through this kind of experience, it's like a brotherhood. You know, you're connected forever.
That's right, exactly. And they were such great teams. You know, the Jets Joe Namath was still the face of the NFL. And the Knick team that won right after us with Walt Frazier and Bill Bradley and Dick Barnett, Willis Reed and David Buescher, I mean, and Coach Holzman. You know, that's another thing that's important. People tend to forget that all three of those teams that year were led by strong coaches or managers. Of course, we had Gil Hodges and Weeb Eubank with the Jets, and Red Holzman, who was really a strong coach, and it started its way from that to top down, and all the guys that I've talked to over the years from all those teams always have great admiration and respect for their manager or their coaches. And so I think that was an important factor in all of us winning and being part of that great year.
Absolutely.
Do you make it down to spring training each year, or you don't do that?
No, I don't go down. I might go to Florida to speak at a function or take a couple of days off, but I don't do anything with the team. No, they haven't asked me to do that, and I understand. You know, they probably have some of the guys from the '86 team. I'm not even sure if there's any '69 Mets down there, but But no, I don't. I haven't been down there for spring training.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, you've been a very busy man since retiring from baseball. Can you share with us, and of course all these callers would like to know, what are some of the things that you're working on right now?
Well, I'm working on another book. I've got two or three subjects that I really want to see if I can pinpoint. I do a lot of speaking engagements. As you mentioned when you were introducing, which was such a nice introduction, that I did manage in Israel in 2007. They started the Israel Baseball League, and that was a great experience. And that opened up a lot of avenues for me to speak at temples and synagogues and Jewish organizations. So I still do a lot of that. And personal appearances, I do it. You know, I worked at Channel 5 in New York for 9 years and did some work on WFAN and ESPN. And occasionally I'm asked to do some of that stuff. But I've got so many interests now that I want to, you know, it's like time is starting to become my enemy. There's so much I still want to do. And I want to do some reading in the public schools. I did that for a while. A few years ago, I've made some contacts about going into public schools and doing some readings and talking about my career. There's some classes there, so I'm working on that. And so I'm just trying to stay busy. You know, it's really the key is to stay busy and stay healthy and keep working out and doing the things that interest me. And that's basically what I'm doing right now.
Do you think you would do more in Israel as time goes on?
Well, I don't know if they'll do a baseball league anymore. I do know that Israel is trying to make it into the World Baseball Classic, and that, of course, is every 4 years, and they almost made it 2000. I believe it was 2012. I was named the ambassador for baseball for the Israel Baseball Association, so that was a nice honor for me, and I was down there for this tournament. And they barely lost the last day to Spain, and Spain went in the tournament. I know they want to get into that 16-team tournament. I think it's in next year. And if they can do that, it'll kind of open some eyes to baseball in Israel. They need to have some fields over there. They don't have the best conditions, and that hurt us when we had the league over there. But I think if they can get some the word out there and some notoriety and get involved in that World Baseball Classic, I think that will open some doors for them. And I'm hoping it does. And if they want me to be part of it, I would love to do it. I have done clinics over there, and I have done some fundraising for them to try and get some fields over there, because that's the worst part of it. They don't have the baseball fields to really develop the game. But I would love to be part of helping them do that, and hopefully that'll happen in the next keep happening in the next couple of years. But so I'm keeping busy, just trying to.
Yes, you are.
manage
all this. Absolutely.
Now, how are the fans over in Israel? Are they as receptive to baseball? I mean, I know that, you know, in Latin America and Japan and China, you know, baseball is a big sport. But, you know, in Israel, with the fans, do you guys get big crowds out there, or?
It's a work in progress. I think they got a lot of fans who were transplanted Americans who live over there and knew the game of baseball, grew up with the game of baseball. The Israelis who don't know about the game really going to have to start from scratch. And I was willing to go over, do some clinics and work with them. Again, the facilities are not that great, but it would have been nice if the league itself would have gone and lasted a few more years, because I think it would have had an opportunity to really kind of work its way into being a sport over there. They don't play it in the schools. They do play Little League baseball over there, and they do have some teams, some leagues. But the problem is whenever they have to play, there's not many games going on in Israel. They have to go to another country to play. They have one decent field over there. It's not the best condition, but it's okay, and they have a couple others that are adequate. But the conditions are just not conducive for teams to come there from other countries. So they need to raise some money. They need to build some quality facilities. And then again, it's a work in progress. But I really enjoyed my time over there. I spent the summer and learned a lot about Israel and a lot about the other countries surrounding Israel. I was very open-minded to learn about some of the good things and some of the problems that are going on. But it was a wonderful experience for me. I made some great friends over there, and it's a beautiful country, And I'll tell you, the progress they make in electronics and the things they do economically and growing stuff over there is just amazing. And it was really a great learning experience for me. And so I still took experience over there and enjoy my time while I was there. So hopefully I'll be able to go back and do some stuff for them in the near future.
Excellent. And, of course, you know I have to bring up all of the charitable work that you do. And I've had the fortunate pleasure to work with you on a couple of my, you know, working with my charitable clients. So I think you should share with us on who you support and why you support them.
I try to do as much as I can. I've done so much, and like you said, I enjoy working with your causes and with you and whatever I can do to help. It's so tough to say no when you get invited to so many things, but I really enjoy the Ronald McDonald House. I've done a bunch of things for them and pediatric cancer and Leukemia Society. I mean, they're all such wonderful causes. I'm so lucky. I'm relatively healthy, and I try to stay, you know, work out and stay in shape, and my kids are relatively healthy, and I feel so lucky in that regard, but I see so much despair and so many problems out there, and whatever I can do to help, I'm always willing to help, but we live in a world that needs support, and whatever we can do for anybody, I try to do as much as I can, and when I can't do it, and I really feel bad, I have all these guilt feelings of not being able to spend more time doing certain things, but I try to do whatever I can. I feel like when I can talk to kids and show them my ring and the World Series ring and talk baseball and brighten their lives. A wise man once told me one time, and I've learned from that experience, he said, look, whatever you can do to brighten somebody's life one way or another, if you can do that, you've accomplished something in your life. And I've always kind of felt like that was such a wise statement, because a lot of us get caught up in our own little worlds of self-pity and self-preservation, but there's a whole world out there that needs support, and if I can help, I try to do the best I can.
I know. You have never said no, and outside of this last time, only because you had a scheduling conflict for an event that we just did with NBA All-Star Weekend, but I know you, and I know how you felt when you had to tell me, no, I'm not going to be here in town, and I just think it's great that you and others come out, because your time is so limited and you're always willing to share that and share your experiences. So that just says so much about you, Art. So thank you for being you.
Thank you for being you.
You know, thank you. But this isn't about me. But I have to bring up the cover that you did for Harper's Bazaar with Lauren Hutton, who happens to be one of my favorites. Wow. Can you talk about that photo shoot? Did you ask her out to dinner or anything?
Actually, if anybody wants to go to my website, it's on there, www.artshamsky.com. I guess I should promote it a little bit. But
No, we were going to promote that for you. We're next. Go ahead.
Sometime right after we won the World Series, I was approached by Bazaar magazine, and didn't really know much about it at the time, and they said, we're going to do a photo shoot, but we're going to use about, I don't know, 7 or 8 athletes in doing all this stuff. And I was one of many, I was probably the least known athlete, if I remember correctly. It was Willie Shoemaker, Mark Spitz, Arthur Ashe, Terry Bradshaw. It was about a number of them, and I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. And they said, we're going to just do some layouts, and I had no idea what they were talking about. So I went and did this photo shoot, and Lauren Hutton was the person I worked with, and she was about 19 at the time, and I remember it took all day. I thought it was really crazy to shoot all these things, and about 3 months later, the next year, I think it was April, 4 months later, of 1970, I was in San Francisco, and I didn't even know it. I was on the cover of Bazaar magazine with Lauren Hutton, and I've had so many people over the years who talk about that. And at the time, I don't know if it's changed. Somebody said, "Well, you're the only male that's ever been on the cover of Bazaar magazine." I don't know if that's still true, but it was really kind of nice for them to use that photo. And like I said, I might have been the least known of all the great athletes that were inside the book, but it's a whole inside the magazine, there's a whole issue of some sort of fashions for spring or something. But I was in uniform, but it was really a nice honor. And she went on to have her great career in modeling and movies at the time. I really never really had a chance to catch up with her any other time, but I'm sure she would remember it. It was a nice time. We had a lot of fun, and we talked baseball. We talked modeling and baseball, and it was a one time.
Wow.
A great time, but she turned out to be big star.
Listen, that's like winning a second World Series, being photographed with Lauren Hutton on the cover of Harper's.
That's
my
right.
Goodness, how many people can really say that?
I know. It was a thrill for me, and people still talk about it. So it was nice. So fun time in my life. It was like I said, my life changed October 16th, 1969, when we won the World Series. So many things happened. I couldn't even begin to tell you all the things, all the shows I was on. Did you know that they took 7 of us to Las Vegas? We were at a show in Caesar's Palace for 2 weeks. About right after the World Series, we sang an Impossible Dream two times a night, a dinner show and late show, and made fools of ourselves. But it's greatest 17 days of my life at Caesar's Palace. I mean, so many things happened. We were on the Ed Sullivan Show. I had to hit softball pitches against a fast pitch girl and Dick Cavett Show one time. I've done so many different things. It's been a wonderful life, and hopefully it'll still go on for a while. But I appreciate you bringing up some of these things because they're really, really important, sweet things in my life.
You know, I'm sure there are people out there listening that they want to come back as you in their next life. Because if I was a male, I certainly would want to come back as you are.
Thank you. That's very sweet.
Remain one of my favorite people. I know I'm very partial to you, but
you're just looking for me to do something, I think, aren't you? Yeah, when you say those sweet things, there's an ulterior motive for that.
No, you know how I feel.
Well, you know anytime. Anytime. That's all you have to do is call me.
No, of course. Well, thank you. We truly appreciate that. But as we wrap up.
We wanted to, and we know you're doing a lot of speaking engagements and appearances. So can you just let our listeners know how they can learn more if they want to, have you at their next event?
Yeah, they can just go to my website, the email there. It's www.artshamsky.com. Pretty simple. And they can email from me for there. And or they can call you and have you call me. you'll
Absolutely.
Be my agent. So that would be great. Yeah, there's still, it was, again, being part of that era, part of that year, it's such a great thing. And people still want to hear about it. A lot of people are into the now. They're out now into the what's going on in the world, but the story I tell and some of the motivational stuff I like to talk about is really pertinent to people, and I think it's important that I always tell people that the 1969 Mets weren't the greatest team to ever win a World Series, but they certainly were one of the most incredible and prominent teams, and I think that'll live on forever, way past when I'm gone, that people will be talking about that team because of the significance and importance they had that year and future years in sports in New York City. And so I'm thankful that you gave me the opportunity to talk about it.
No, and we're grateful that you are on the show with us today and sharing all your personal experiences. I know that people love hearing these stories and they don't really get the opportunity to hear them. So you certainly making a lot of the listeners happy and excited to hear these stories. And we can't thank you enough for joining us today. And I just
My
want
pleasure.
Everybody to know that they can follow you on Twitter at Art Shamsky, and that's ArtShamsky, and also on Facebook, facebook.com, Art Shamsky. And again, for more information and speaking engagements, you can visit the website, www.artshamsky.com. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And Art, thank you so much for your time, and we hope we can have you back on again.
Anytime.
We look forward to seeing you soon.
You guys asked great questions, and it was a pleasure for me to be on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Art.
Have a fantastic weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay. Stay warm.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye,
you too. Bye-bye.